Hey everyone, how you going? It's Nelly here. Happy New Year to you. Don't know where that came from. Hey, we at the Dear Nelly team hope 2024 is full of love and adventure and rest and all the things, whatever that looks like for you. And thank you again for your continued support for this funny little podcast. Now, we've got some very exciting news. We have another live show coming up. This one is on Thursday, the 8th of February at the Malthouse Outdoors at the iconic Malthouse Theatre in Melbourne as part of their annual podcast season where they showcase the best podcasts around. I am thrilled to confirm that the lineup includes me, obviously, hosting. We also have comedian, author, and broadcaster Sammy Shah. Jesus, he's funny. He's so great on radio. He's so great at all the things. Some of you may know him from The Australian Story on ABC, which featured the incredible tale of him and his now wife, academic Kylie Moore Gilbert, who was sentenced to 10 years in an Iranian prison, but thankfully made it home. What a love story. We also have comedian and Dear Nelly favourite, the incomparable Kirsty Wiebeck, who also happens to be one of my strawberriest of strawberry friends, and I know you all adore her. And last but not least, oh my God, we have comedian and actor Lizzie Hu. Lizzie bloody Hu. She's on all the comedy specials, on all the streaming services, and no doubt she's one of the hottest bloody comedians going around. Now, I mean hot as in popular, but you know, you go with whatever. So look, I urge you to get in and book tickets via the Malthouse website or my website at nellythomas.com, and of course there are links in the show notes. Couple of other quick reminders, keep your calls coming. If you can, join Patreon or Acast Plus for $5 a month for bonus episodes and other rewards. This year, paid subscribers will get live Zoom events with me throughout the year where we can do Q&As and interact. Now, this podcast was recorded in the council area known as Darabin in Melbourne. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation, and pay my respects to their elders past, present, and emerging. Last but not least, some things don't change, Moles. This is a sex, dating, and relationships podcast for adults. If you don't like swearing, it's really going to give you the shit. So off your fuck.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice. Dear Nelly, yeah, some help would be nice. Dear Nelly, I'm eager to hear your point of view. Dear Nelly, there's a lot to explore. Dear Nelly, when you're 40 or more. Dear Nelly, so I'm hoping we can talk it through.
Welcome to Dear Nelly, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40. And we are joined, oh my God, we are joined by Jacinta Parsons, broadcaster, author, just ingenue about town.
I like that. No one has ever said those words before.
They will now.
Now I'm going to put it in my bio so they You should have really crazy things in the bios just to make, you know, when we go to festivals and stuff, they read out things. I love it.
I love that shit. Like, I always try and put something kooky in. Like, I was a BMX champion.
Were you
So,
really?
yeah, I was many moons ago. So, for me, it's sort of, I like that in my intro so that when I come on stage, I'm confounding expectations because I don't look like an elite athlete, Jacinta.
Well, I would hazard to argue with that. But I mean, how much have you spoken about your BMX championship life?
Yeah, not a great deal.
You buried the lead on your whole existence.
Thank you so much. Because people, whenever I'm introduced with that, it's like all my whatever professional achievements, that's all I care about, and no one else cares.
How can they not? That's one of the best things I've ever heard. What do you mean when you say champion? Were you like how old and for how long and what did you win?
Under 30, well, the peak of my career was under 13 state girls WA BMX champion.
Get out of
Yeah,
here.
man. I had a red line. I had like a white bodysuit with a red lightning strike down it. I had a red helmet. I had to race the boys until I was 10 because there were really no girls riding. It wasn't until I started like touring to compete
Oh,
that I
did you
started
jump
racing.
through like flame hoops and stuff, or was it just more like doing the jumps and like skidding out and stuff?
All that, well, my final, the last day of riding, since you've raised it, was me attempting to do. I don't know if you remember, if you have like the big double jumps. So there's low doubles and triples, there's a high double. And I was in a championship and thought, I can, I'm Nicole Kidman. Of course, I can fucking do that. Like, let's go. And I locked bikes with mid-air and one of our pedals went through my guts.
Oh my, so that
Yeah.
was the last ride.
First ride in the ambulance, last ride on the BMX.
That is so, this is a book, woman. Oh my God, how incredible. I
Yeah.
love that so much because like that's like a thing you only could imagine as possible. And do you ride a bike now like you're a BMX bandit still, or is that?
I did for some time. Like I was a big bike rider when I lived in the inner city. I'm in the burbs now. When I was in the inner city, I didn't have a car, so I rode everywhere, even when I had kids. But now, as is the classic Australian dream, I'm too far from everything to ride that, and I'm too old and fat, Jacinta. Like
You
I
didn't
don't want
go.
to arrive somewhere sweaty.
But could you go onto a course and do some business?
Oh, I would venture, I guess. That I would attempt it, but that I'd end up being too heavy. It's like cartwheels, where you go, I can totally do that. And then you go, no, I weighed 40 kilos when I was doing cartwheels.
It's like monkey bars. Like they're
Monkey bars.
impossible as with an adult body.
Yeah.
Oh,
Got the
Nelly,
chin-ups.
that's the best thing that's happened today. I'm
Oh.
even this week is finding that you are a BMX bandit.
Going to send you some pictures, but hey, talk to me, because it's your intro. Is broadcaster, is that how you would define yourself professionally?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I feel spiritually connected to broadcasting. I
Yeah.
feel like I did it when I was 8 years old in my bedroom.
Did you?
I made shows constantly. I did
Oh.
live OBs where I would perform the radio show and I would pre-record like Bob Hawke, his answers to my questions. That was me being Bob Hawke.
Oh
Oh,
my God. Can I give you a moment of serendipity? First of all, OB means outside broadcast for people listening. Bob Hawke. So I use SpeakPipe for people to ring in with listener questions because obviously it's an agony aunt kind of situation. The picture of me on the SpeakPipe on the website is me imitating Bob Hawke. Because I'm a huge Hawke fan. I nearly did a thesis on Keating, like that whole era. And it's Hawkey in the robe with a fag and a beer.
oh my God, this is what we call, yeah, magic.
This is what we call love.
Yeah. So,
I
I mean,
love it. So
yeah,
little JP's in her bedroom and or doing outside broadcasts, interviewing an imaginary Bob Hawke?
so it was me being Bob Hawke giving the answers to the questions that I posed live.
Mate, you are mental.
Why? Yeah, exactly. because it's one of those beautiful propositions that when you're 8 or however old, you know, that kind of 7 yeah. and 8 year, there's that idea that you ask a child, what are you?
Yeah.
And they're close to the truth of what yes. might eventuate. Whether that's because you've seeded it into your kind of consciousness and then you therefore live it out, or whether there's some kind of sense of knowing who we are very early on. Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's a bit of column A, a bit of column B, because life and a sense of responsibility knocks that stuff out of you.
Yes.
Right? Like I remember writing a story, the exact same thing. I'd kind of gone, oh, I want to be a teacher or a nurse or all the things that I thought were, you know, normal for little girls to want. And my pivotal grade 3 teacher went, no, you don't. Like, what do you actually want to be? Because you're not that kid. And I'm like, I want a magic carpet and I'm going to be called Wawani.
And you pretty much did that as a BMX bandit flying through the sky.
There you go. Oh, I love that. And so you then end up in community radio, and you and I know each other from ABC radio, where you are, where have you been working for like 10 years? You've been working on ABC radio.
Yeah, I started out as the music director for local radio.
Yeah.
And then did everything possible to find my way onto air, because I'd been working at Triple R before that for about 8 years, doing various shows, working on kind of live music, etc.
Yeah.
So I loved being on air. I love the magic that happens as a broadcaster. But it's so interesting that you say that, you know, all that stuff gets knocked out of you, and the pragmatism of living in this world that we're in kind of takes hold.
Mm.
That is exactly what happened to me, and I didn't follow that desire to do radio until I got really sick. My whole world was decimated.
Mm.
And it was just like a point where I was in like my late 20s.
Mm.
Said, oh, God, what do I actually want to do? And then went through the process of finding my way back to perhaps what was always supposed to happen.
Always meant to be. You know, it's such a fraught area, as you well know, because you've written a book on it. And we'll get on to that. But, you know, I have a kid with a chronic illness. You've suffered chronic illness for a long time. I'm always loathed when people are like, what's the silver lining and what have you learned? So I want to go, fuck off. Like, we're not resilient. We're limping. This is really hard. You know, having said that, I see the same thing that you've said in her, where she has had such a gift of being, she's still only 16, I don't think she will ever live for someone else's script. She knows what it means to have the rug pulled out from under you and normal be ripped up. And that kid is going to do her own thing for the rest of her life.
I love everything you've said there, because I totally agree. And the reason why I wrote the book Unseen the way I did was, whilst I'd already had the experience of what that can bring you, which is an incredible insight. I don't think it's right necessarily to tell the story of illness like that. Like, oh, it's this magical moment of discovery, because the reality of it is all that other stuff as well. And we need to find space and compassion for the limping and for the reality of what it is. If we find something, that's not because it's necessary that we should, you know. Maybe it's a wonderful byproduct, but I think it's the cautiousness around talking about illness through that frame. I think you're absolutely right, and I 1,000% agree with you. But it has been for you experiences. Yeah,
and I think it's both. I mean, I just hesitate because I know, and you know this. Like, I mean, I do a monthly gig with a bunch of carers. And these are not the kind of carers that make everyone feel better. They're not going to a function and eating cupcakes and going, what a privilege. These are the kinds of carers who can't leave the house, who can only meet via Zoom, who even then find that difficult. Some are literally, and I mean literally, housebound. And the idea of saying to them, oh, wow, look at you developing your resilience. Like, if I would want to punch me in the face. You know, it's like what they need, and it's unpalatable for the rest of us to hear, they need more help. They need money. They need superannuation. They need, do not tell me all the lessons are good. Like, they're fucking limping.
I want to hug you via the screen right now, because that's what we lose.
Yeah.
We go too quickly to the end of the story.
Yeah, we
what
do.
We lose is the deep compassion, our need to slow down and listen and actually respond to what is happening rather than this magical kind of outcome. And again, it's there and it's all that stuff, but mostly society needs to just really take on what the needs are of carers or health systems and all the things that are going on, and telling the truth around that stuff, I think, is still vital that we hear the hard stories of it.
Can I put you, because obviously, my God, I could talk about chronic illness and so could you all for the entire time, but I'm interested, we've had this a couple of times, someone quite rightly, and I'll thank her again, corrected me when I was talking about my experience going on the apps initially, and I was kind of being funny and flippant and going, oh my God, I don't want any pen pals. Like, stop with all the fucking messaging, because it's like it can go on and text, and are we ever going to meet up? And a lovely woman rang in and quite rightly said, look, I have chronic illness. That's all I can do. And that's been a real lifeline for me, you know, to be able to have that like flirtation and a bit of frisson and whatever, that's all I can offer. But I'm not playing games. I'm not mucking around. It's my limitations. And she's quite right. And I wonder if, can you speak to that?
Well, in a strange kind of comparison, we've had that pushback as well when we do radio and we say, I just really want to talk to you. Use your voice with us. That's what we love. And the importance of explaining, well, actually, you know, all I can do, and it's a massive deal for me, is text you.
Yeah.
So shush it about wanting it more or wanting it different. In terms of, I guess, you know, getting on the apps, I haven't. So no experience.
Yeah.
That. But I do think, you know, that enormous vulnerability of having stuff that you can't. And I think at this age,
disclosing
and kind of realizing, I mean, yeah, I think the barrier for getting involved with anyone else is so high in some ways. There's so much stuff.
Yeah.
That it's quite disconcerting.
It can be. I definitely think you can go in and out of that, is my own experience and what I hear from callers. But I agree. I mean, at this age, you cannot get to our age and not have accrued some wounds, whether they're physical, psychological, emotional, and how do they interact with the other person's wounds? You know, and that's a real dance of kind of working out, like, the word trigger's overused, but you know what I mean. Like, your shit might be triggering my shit and we might not even know we've got shit.
Yeah.
Like, how much insight do you have? Can you tell me what year was your last date? And I mean first date.
Oh, my God. Let's go back to 1990, like, 5 or 6.
Yes, girl. Oh, my God, the Keating years.
The Keating years, babe.
Wow. So 1996. Like, I think mine was extreme. When I started dating, I'd be like, oh, my God, I haven't had a date since, like, 1998. 1996. So if and when you ever decide to start dating, because you, for context, you've been in a long-term relationship that ended about 18 months ago. When, if and when you decide to go on a date, you'll be entering a world that is completely different.
That's right. And that's part of, I mean, there are so many barriers for entry in my heart and spirit that are probably real, but they're there. That's one of them. You know this very well. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this know this so well. This was not the way we did it.
No.
And this sort of scrutiny of each other and the ways that are probably quite good, but quite cumbersome, was not how it happened. You would get to know someone gradually and you would put faith and hope into something. So,
and you get the vibe of the thing and sort of see how that, it's a completely, would you like, this is not how it's going to start. And I know you're not ready for dating yet. And I think that's a really interesting conversation. We need to validate that. to kind of go, you don't have to be ready. You don't have to go, well, I'm 18 months. It's time. It's time. Like, we've got callers who go, I'm out. I'm out for good. And yeah. I go, fair enough. Know thyself. You know, like, don't go into it because everyone's telling you to. You might be perfectly content in your own company. Great.
Yeah.
Winning. That's but right. Let's go down a rabbit hole of hypotheticals, assuming that one day you might date. Do you have questions for the lovely lady in front of you who's a little bit further down that track?
Can you avoid the apps?
Yes.
But when, you know, then the question is, what does one do in the world?
So I reckon this is very specific advice to you, though, because particularly in Melbourne, but probably more broadly, you have, you know, you're a Melbourne personality. You've got a profile. I think the apps would be actually more complicated for you than most. There is one that I've already told you about that you can go on that kind of gets around that a little bit. But my advice to you would be, and it's really hard to do, you've got to tell everyone you know you're looking and what you're looking for.
Right.
Because people don't, at our age, and it's not conscious, they don't think, oh, I'll set Jacinta up.
No.
But if you say to 10 friends, you know, you're a people person, you would know 10 people that you could say to, right, I'm ready. This is my rough criteria. Keep that as broad as you can. Like, don't be too kind of restrictive. And I bet you there'll be someone that one of them will go, oh, I hadn't thought of this. But now that you say it, how about this? And do it that way.
Did you do that?
I did initially, yeah.
How did that go?
Yeah, really well.
Yeah.
Really well, yeah. I mean, it didn't eventuate in, like, I'm not with that person now. But I don't consider it a failure.
No.
I think
but it eventuated in something that
absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. And it's a bit, it felt a bit safer emotionally in all the senses to kind of go, well, I know that this person is known by someone that I respect.
Mm.
So unless they've got a really bad read, there's some element of vetting.
Yeah. I love that.
Do that when you're ready, and don't be, speaking of ripping up the script, normalize it. Don't be ashamed of that. Let people know, right, mama's on the tear. Let's go. And see what happens.
And that would be exactly how I would say it. Mama is on the tear.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I guess how do you know that you are ready to go into that world?
You don't.
You don't.
I think
like your mama bear right now holding me.
Yeah. I'm going through my little black book in my head going, who I can set you up with, Belle. I know you're not ready. And I'm trying to also respect that. How do you know? I think you know when you're not ready. And that's actually that's where you are from my senses.
Yeah.
You know when you're going, I'm really enjoying this space on my own. I don't feel, I mean, I know this is crass, but it's like if you're not thinking, oh, I'd really like a pash, or I'd really like someone to like sleep over, and I don't even mean sex. I mean, that's obviously part of it, but I mean that kind of intimacy that's very physical and someone in your space. If the thought of that, and I was there for a long time of kind of going, absolutely not, I'm so enjoying having my own bed, just as an example, like the luxuriousness of a queen size bed on your own.
Babe.
If you're still there, ride that wave.
Do you know that was what you came on my show to talk about that experience? And that was one of the things you talked about. And I almost think we could trace back those those initial moments of wondering about whether a separation would be good to that conversation.
Yeah, right.
Bed. Or just, you know, the autonomy.
The autonomy. Yeah, that's what it's about, right? It's not, we make it because of the historical overlays and the religious stuff and whatever, we make it into something even perverse. That's why I say I don't think it's even necessarily about sex. It might be, and if it is, you go for it. But I think it's about, are you ready to seed some of your physical autonomy and emotional and spiritual and whatever words you want to call it? I don't think you are yet. Great.
It's such a beautiful way to think about it, isn't it? Because it's, and I think that is a very empowering way to think about it.
Yeah.
Are you ready yet to seed that? Because that is what really happens at the end of the day, isn't it? And that can be a joyful, wonderful experience. Mm. But if that still turns your tummy,
yep,
that's a really good indication that that's not where you're at. I love that.
I think the other thing on that level, and I really noticed this myself, and I've heard it from other callers, this is why it is very different to dating when you're 20.
Yeah.
I think when you're 20, you give it all away without even thinking about it. From our age, you simply can't and should not do that. And so one thing to note, I think, is if you have the tendency to give it all away, pull it back. But conversely, if you won't give anything away, that's not how relationships work. You're not ready.
That's it. Oh, good bloody words, Nellie.
You know what I mean?
I really do.
Yeah.
I think that is just a lovely framing, and all of it's good. It's just where you are.
It's
and
just where you are.
That's a really great way to understand it.
And can I say to you, beautiful lady, speaking of being where you are, this is, I mean, I assume this will happen because it happened to me and it happens to pretty much anyone who's dating. The first time you get rejected, which is probably going to happen, right, unless you find the, you know, next love of your life on your first date, remember that. It's not about a rejection of you. It's we're not right for each other at this time.
Yeah.
Or you're not the right person for me. That doesn't mean you're wrong. That doesn't mean I'm wrong. It's probably circumstance and timing, and then gracefully move on.
It's funny how that very primal, that young part of us,
oof,
need rejection, same way perhaps we always have, you know, of self.
Yeah.
But again, with the later in life, you can apply such different understanding and reasoning to it.
Mm.
I think that's such a good thing too, testing that muscle.
Oh, like little baby Jacinta, if she's anything like little baby Nelly, will fucking rage, right? There is like a little toddler in there kind of going, but why don't you love me? And then you even can step back and go, I don't even love you. You know, like you got to be, and we've got a much better chance of that at this age of having that insight.
Yeah.
And kind of going, is this ego? I think this is ego. I'm not actually hurt. My ego's bruised.
Yeah, because it does feel there's a bigness to it, isn't there? That's not real, but that kind of you put yourself, that vulnerability that, you know, being see through, and then not being enough for someone, which is not the correct kind of way to see it, but that's what arcs up.
Yeah, for sure. And that's all part of it, I reckon. It's just you've got a better chance of recognizing that and also then dealing with it than you would have when it was 1996. Can you tell me in as much or as little detail as you're comfortable with? So you two were in a relationship for like 25 years.
Yeah.
No, quite, that's a bloody long relationship. How are you going being single?
Initially, I went through that, oh my God, this is the best experience that I've ever had. And that lasted some time. And then I think the reality of suddenly being without family around me 24/7 and me having a very clear identity within that family, even though I never thought I was sucked into that stuff. You know, I'm a feminist and I was like, I am just a woman who has this experience. But I had to come to terms with the fact that I had, that it was very painful to reckon with that loss.
Yeah.
That came upon me probably harder than it might have had I been more aware of my relationship to the family unit that I was part of. Yeah.
Oh, I completely can. I think everyone listening can relate to that. And this is, without getting too much down a cultural studies rabbit hole, this is exactly how real power works. You don't see it. Right.
Yeah.
So if you've got the cultural capital of the 2.2 kids and the mum and the dad in the burbs, you're just living, you know, and you're just paying, and you don't even recognize how much approval that comes with. There's economic incentives. There's a whole range of things that you're getting that you don't realize because you're the center.
Absolutely. And being humble to that, I think, was a few months for me to recognize how much I bought into it when I was telling myself I hadn't.
Yes. And
still, I have pangs of that loss, I think, of what I read into and spoke about and thought about, I think, in that unconscious or in that privileged way, I suppose, of that nuclear family.
Mm.
That, you know, at an intellectual level, I have huge issues with it. I don't agree. Yes. But there is something else at play, strong conditioning around that.
Of course. And, I mean, think about the set in going back to dating, same thing. There's an intellectual experience that's very different to a bodily and emotional experience. Yeah. So something as trivial as sitting at a family barbecue, you might intellectually be kind of going, I don't give a shit who's married. I don't care. Doesn't matter. I don't care who's got kids. We're all just people. All the while, even unconsciously, you are receiving messages that the way you're living is good and that's normal.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So it offers that opportunity to kind of step outside the fishbowl, you know, in the small way that a white woman can, you know, she's receiving lots of affirmative stuff for a whole range of reasons. But it's a really, and again, not to go too quickly to the end of how fantastic that reckoning is.
Mm.
It's very brutal.
Mm.
But there is only kind of, I think, the path, if you're prepared to kind of get smacked in the face with it, is about working out what the fuck you are.
Yeah.
I don't have all that stuff.
And what you want.
What you want, all of it, which is a really, you know, that's a really cool thing to have as an older person, you know, which I think happens in our lives in all sorts of ways. And this is just another one of those ways that you have the opportunity to sort of step into the ring and see what comes of it. Mm. But it's really painful.
It is incredibly painful. So what the terminology we use on Dear Nelly is like, you've got to sit in the shit for a while.
Yeah.
You know, and that might come, one of the reasons, and regular listeners will know, our next segment's always Armchair Expert, where I give you like a meme or a tweet or something. But I actually want to talk about the magnificent article that you wrote on this very subject, and I'll put a link in the show notes. It was for the ABC. And the thing that resonated so strongly with me is I expected after the end of my long-term relationship to be really devastated, and I wasn't. All right. Much like you, I was actually quite euphoric. It had been a long time coming. I wanted the autonomy. I wanted the space, all that sort of stuff. It took me, I reckon, a good year to be devastated. And then it really hit me. So I was sort of lulled into a false sense of euphoria.
Yeah.
But then, like you, and I'd like you to speak to this if you're comfortable doing it, then moved into embracing solitude, which is very different to loneliness.
Yeah. Wow. It is, because I'm writing a book at the moment as well on older women and wisdom.
Mm.
Older women in their 80s and 90s, our elder women, I should say, have deep experience, loneliness or solitude or both.
Yes.
And the way that they have spoken to me about it and what it looks like when it's quite profound.
Tell me.
Each of them have offered, you know, a different sort of take, but the resonance is the same. One woman I spoke to the other day, 93-year-old, said that solitude is such an important aspect to understand how we do it. She said, past takes you back and you land back in things that you long for. Mm. And that's when you feel lonely.
Yes.
She's the last person of her tribe, is the way she described her life. Oof. She's there now by herself on earth.
Yeah.
And I said to her, how do you not be submerged and dunked by that experience of loneliness. And she said, I go outside and I hear the Maggies. And this beautiful kind of realization that nature, that the world has answers for us. I know that sounds whatever, but hearing that from her was so beautiful. Another woman in her 80s was really strong on this, and she said she'd gone through refugee camps up until the age of from 4 to 15 years of age and had to learn how to live by herself, really, surrounded by people. And she said the strong women that are known through history are the ones that know how to validate themselves and live in solitude. And so she feels really strongly that it's something we should be teaching each other and our children about. Is solitude is to face the uncomfortable experiences of what being alone can bring us, but not to be frightened and hurry around and do things. It's like that things when kids are bored, it's like fantastic. Wait to see what comes of you now.
Yeah.
But for me, it was a really deep kind of experience of understanding the difference, because the loneliness was so painful.
Yeah.
Feeling it such a loss. And in the same way as the 93-year-old thinking back and going back to a past that you yearn for is lonely. And then transforming that into the same kind of questions around, well, who am I and what is it to be by myself here? What is my value? Do I have any? Because I had to face that. I didn't feel at all like I had value anymore.
Oh, darling.
I know. But that's the raw truth of it.
Yeah, I get it.
If I was worth cooking for, whether I was worth celebrating. Why would? Because everything in my life had always been relational. I'd always been in relationship to children, to family, to everything in close proximity. But going through the experience of like being with that, like not trying to get rid of that, but sort of transforming it into a different idea of power. Like how can we see it in a different light? How can we use the time to go up and down rather than linear? You know, what's going on? Let's go deeper. Let's just see it. Like, let's watch a bit more. And yeah, that changed everything. To the point where when you talk about seeding that space, it's now quite a treasured part of my existence.
Yeah, exactly. So the very thing that we are terrified of, we're now protecting.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's like, this is my dance space. That is your dance space. We're at the Kellermans. Off you go. You know, like it's a profound experience and you can't skip the steps. So sometimes people ring in kind of go, oh, how can I get over heartbreak? How can I do? You can't. You need to move through the process. It'll take some people more time than others. It'll hit you at different times. I think the thing that I want to say to you, and I don't know if this is depressing as fuck or really great. I find it great, but I recognize the depressing element of it. You were alone all along.
That's right. That's
right. To me, that when that hit me, that's when I went, okay, now I know what to do. Because something didn't get taken, right? That was actually always the case. I was living with certain illusions that we all do to, you know, existential dread's a real thing. Avoid it, avoid it. Once I started to embrace it, and I think having, ironically, given this is where the conversation started, having a child with a chronic illness has actually helped me do that. Because life is nothing like what I thought it was going to be like. And so I've had to slowly do that process and then do it again in terms of a relationship and kind of go, I know, and you know, this could happen to anyone at any point.
Yeah. When you bring up, because what you made me think of then as well was that first understanding of the aloneness when I was really, really sick. And I was in my early 20s, so my world around me, whilst busy and happening, I was so alone.
Yeah.
And at that point, really, really cross about it. Like, how can you not understand? Why?
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Why are you not beside me right now and helping me? Yeah. To friends, to family, I was really, really cross about that isolation. And there was, like, honestly, one kind of moment of I'm alone.
Yeah.
And that is okay, because anything above that, if I can be alone and do that, anything above that is a bonus. You know, any positive.
Yes.
I can't expect it. I can't
hope
that the world will give me the comfort. Nobody can comfort that pain. Nobody could have comforted me through the experience of that psychological experience. And realizing that and letting everybody get a pass.
Yeah.
And this pathway to really genuine love and appreciation rather than lack.
Can I give you a concrete example? I remember I would sit there in the worst of those days. I would sit there and, like, I'd literally be going, where is everybody?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. Like, if this happened to someone else, I'd take a lasagna, you know, whatever, all the things. And then once I started to get into shouting in the wind, I call it, like, it's coming straight back at you. I'm the only one who's getting upset. You know, no one else can hear it. And then when I got to the point where, okay, acceptance is the key. Accept that this is where you are. This is where your child is. This is where other people in your life are. And it's not personal. Then anything that anyone gave me, I was grateful for, instead of, why didn't you give me more? You know, so if they brought a lasagna, well, why didn't you bring a dessert? And why didn't you stay and have it with me and have a chat? It's a real deficit mindset. Rather than kind of going, wow, Jacinta went out of her way to bring me over a tiramisu. Thank you so much.
I've never brought you a tiramisu.
I know. I'm planting ideas.
Really, it's really true. And because I think it's part of the grief process as
well.
We find everything outside of us because there's so much pain inside. It's like, oh, fuck, it belongs out there to the lack of love that I have.
Yeah.
But the wonderful, and again, I've never spoken about it as much, but I love it because acceptance is the everything.
Yeah.
Even speaking to these older women, accepting death
is
what their job is, and they mostly 100% accepting of that. So therefore there's no pain involved. Necessarily.
Well, you're in the same way that the first few dates that you go on that don't work out will be devastating. After you've been on five or six and they don't work out, you go, okay, all right. You know, your ego might be bruised, you might be disappointed, but you'll bounce back quicker. And I don't honestly mean this trivially, but I genuinely mean it. Probably because I'm reading the Stoics at the moment, but they're like, you need to contemplate your death. And the death of the people that you love, not endlessly, don't dwell on it, but you need to face that regularly so that when that inevitability arrives, you actually have some muscle to deal with it.
I have been, since my illness, well, particularly at the crux of the danger that I felt that I was in, knew that I needed to deal with my death.
Yeah.
It was such a fear of mine and very triggered. By illness and by fragility, and mortality comes up to you. So I went on, and I still persist in dealing with and reading about and looking into the death.
Lean into it.
I've leaned in so freaking hard.
Yeah.
Because they say it and we know it, but living this stuff is really different, which is why, again, speaking to older women, the elders, about the reality, this is not now, well, you might die tomorrow. Mm. You really may die tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, you've had to truly
face
but the freedom that comes with that and the love almost of living not in that really empty way, but in a really interesting way when you take fear outside of it, or when you know you can handle that pain.
Like, I was just about to say, the good news for you and for anyone listening, I think, who has been through the end of a long-term relationship, may not have even been long-term, a significant heartbreak even, however you want to frame it, the good news is you know you can do it.
That's right.
So the next time, if that happens, you go into a relationship, if you're anything like me, your biggest fear will be, I can't do that again. You know, like protect, put up your armor, all of that kind of stuff. And then there's a point at which you kind of go, but I can do it again. I've done it.
That's right.
I've done it. Like, yes, it's incredibly painful and dealing with disappointment of others and in yourself and a whole range of scripts and all of that kind of stuff. Yes, it's all very painful, but it is bloody doable. I have done it and I know I will never be in a relationship that doesn't serve me.
I love that. I've sort of the visual that I have around that I've had for many years now is, once you've touched the bottom of the pool, you've gone down and touched the bottom and you've been at the bottom, you're like, ah, okay, yeah. Actually know the terrain. I'm not frightened of it. So you're
100.
Actually, you're more, there's a greater capacity, I think, to risk, because you understand your terrain.
Yeah.
We don't want to flout up what illness does, but it shows you the terrain, shows you your capacity.
Completely. And there are in place, even now in 2024, cultural, historical, religious narratives that are literally designed with the intent of keeping women in particular frightened to leave marriages.
Yeah.
That bottom of that pool will rip your arm off and you will bleed out and you will have nobody and all of, you know, and I think you and I can both, from slightly different positions, but the same story, go, that is simply not true. That is not to deny that you're going to feel at points like you're going to drown.
Yeah,
you are. But there is a point at which you will come up, and I'm laboring the metaphor, but you'll take that bloody big deep breath when you hit the surface and you'll go, oh, thank God.
Yeah, you really will. And I think there is something to be said for following what you know to be true, because when you don't, I think, I don't know, every experience I've had when I haven't followed where I need to be going comes back. It doesn't doesn't just chill. It just complicated.
What lesson do you need to keep learning? So Tom Ballard was on a couple of episodes ago, and his beautiful question, because I mentored him when he was like 14, right? So we have this sort of mummy baby relationship, even though he's a big boy. But he said, like, what's the lesson that you haven't learnt that you sort of keep learning? And I think I'm got much closer to it, but my answer was like actions over words, right? Yeah. I hear if someone says something, I kind of go, oh, great. That sounds, I believe you. And just sort of getting into that. I don't want to be judgmental or cynical of people, but I've also got to look for more evidence. And we all have that. We've all got one of those things, and dating will test that, Jacinta. You realize, even if you don't know what it is yet, it'll come up and you go, shit, I thought I'd learned that one.
Yeah. Well, it's very confronting, even before, like in preparation for this, the confrontation is, what am I giving away already, even before I start? What am I saying is not enough, you know?
Yeah.
That agenda.
Well, can we do this before you even contemplate doing that? Me, you, a couple of Aperol spritzers, a pen, a piece of paper. I'm not big on, like, I refuse to do things like, income brackets or hair color, or they've got to be this tall, like all that shit, whatever. But there'll be deal breakers. And one of those deal breakers, for example, will be like, how do you feel after being in their company?
Yes.
If you feel like you're begging for attention, or you feel diminished, or like you better dull yourself down, or you're too much, or you're not enough, off you fuck. Next.
So good to hear you say and speak about it so clearly, because we have been taught since we were little not to trust that.
For sure.
You know, not to trust if we don't feel good, it's probably our fault, you know, because we aren't good enough.
I'm reading it wrong.
Yeah, deep stuff around, well, because you're not good enough. So therefore you better try harder, or you've got to be accepting all of that. It's really cool to not be in a situation where I think where you can start making more of those choices about yourself. But yeah, being aware.
You know what, girl, you're starting from the best position because you don't need it.
Yeah.
Right? You're starting from a position where you are happy as you are, or you wouldn't be trying to protect that autonomy. So that's perfect, because if and when you decide you want a date, they will have to be of a suitable caliber for you to cede that autonomy.
That's my massive problem for sure.
That's not a problem.
Oh, it's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this for you. You're coming back on. I'm not even asking you. Right. Are you ready for a listener call?
Yeah. Yes, please.
Ellie, love the podcast. It's amazing. I've been really enjoying it over the last year. Thank you so much for all of your wise words. My question is about navigating relationships with neurodiverse individuals. So the situation is that after my marriage of almost 20 years and 3 kids ended, I slowly started dating this guy who's been married 3 times. Maybe that's a red flag, but I try not to judge. The first 6 months was really lovely because he had a lot of the traits that my ex didn't. He was very, very good in bed, affectionate, tidy. He provides acts of service, and he's a really good listener. He's very organized and schedules his life. And given we lived 45 minutes apart, we'd spend every other weekend together. And there were so many things about that that were lovely. It was really nice until the cracks started appearing in the final 6 months. Like, he doesn't enjoy food and sees it only as sustenance and won't try anything new. So eating out was rare, and I'm a bit of a foodie. He doesn't enjoy the hustle bustle of the city or the arts or concerts or museums or wineries or festivals or sports, and is much more of a stay-at-home guy with his 2 kids who aren't all that active either. Occasionally they will go for a hike or to a movie, and they will only travel in Asia since it's cheaper, never in Australia. He also thinks Australia is bleak and ugly and prefers tropical, so we once went to Wilson's prom and he commented that it wasn't that nice. What? We then started to fight about how it didn't occur to him to ever check in and say hello when we weren't physically together, so for over a week at a time. How I carried all the mental load of organizing anything we might do outside the home. How any sort of gift giving or receiving wasn't something he cared about whatsoever. And how he basically was lacking in cognitive empathy, although he had a high degree of emotional empathy, and was essentially almost Buddhist in his care for spiders and all forms of life. Now, it's been 1 year since we broke it off for these reasons, and I've dated rather unsuccessfully, and he is reaching out and wanting to get back together, and I'm being very open about these things and how he would need to consider my needs a lot more than he ever has. But when someone is neurodiverse, do you just take them as they are and accept this and appreciate their amazing qualities? If they can't understand us and our needs, is that okay? I'm thinking I can't go there again, but then I question my compassion and tolerance sometimes. I can't be the only one who's had a challenging time navigating a relationship with a neurodiverse partner. So I'd really like to hear your thoughts, Nellie. Thank you.
Jacinta Parsons, can I just, like, there's so many things. My head's exploding. But one of the things I want to say, first of all, before I come to you, is the idea that someone is, and I quote, almost Buddhist in their love and reverence for an aunt, but can't be for their partner. That is the thing that where the place I'll be starting. But let me go to you, dear Jacinta. What do you hear? What do you say? Give me.
Look, I hear so much in this as well. And what I hear really clearly, and I think even if we frame it in the way that you have described this last hour, Nellie, around what we ask for.
Yeah.
So if you have someone who was able to deliver that for 6 months and went, actually, that was a mask and I'm unable to keep it up, but that was what sustained you and nurtured you and was good for you, It's absolutely beautiful and fine that that human exists in the way that they do, but it doesn't nurture you or sustain you. That's a massive, I'm just going to say it. I'd say bump out, no whammies, no whammies or whatever that was to say. I say you are, and the way that you've also framed it in the call around not having successful dating, therefore maybe I was being, no, you're not.
Nah.
What did you want to say about it? Because you'll have much more wise words than I have.
Oh, I don't know that I will, because I'm quite, like, I'm heightened, if I'm honest. Like, there's so many things. I'm triggered. I'm emotional. There's so many things I want to say.
It is a bit emotional.
It is really emotional. And I really respect and understand, and I hope that the listeners do as well, that there is always a balance between accepting people, whether it's they're neurodivergent, whether they have a mental illness, whether they have a different personality to you, maybe they have a health condition, maybe that, all these things. Of course, we want acceptance and tolerance. That does not mean he's the right person for you.
No. And
your needs matter. That's the thing that I want to say unequivocally. Who knows whether or not he's unable to fulfill your needs because he's neurodivergent? Maybe that's it. Maybe it's his personality. Maybe he can't be bothered. Maybe he doesn't see it as important. Maybe he does and can't do it. None of us know. All you can go on is what he is doing. He's hurting you.
Yeah.
Right?
He's not an addition.
Yeah.
He's a subtraction to the life that you see yourself living. Your life is full of love and joy. I mean, how Buddhist can you be if you go to the Wilson's Pool and not see the beauty?
And you know what? This one sounds like a joke, but I mean it sincerely as someone who has a neurodivergent kid. You're not his mum.
Yeah.
Right? If you were his mum, you need to accept all those things and you need to work with all of those things and you will love him till the day both of you die. You are not his mum. You are seeking a partner. I wanted to give you an example, actually, and see how this lands with you, because, of course, I emailed her back. I was a little bit worried about this particular call. Sometimes I'm like, I need to contact you before the episode's going to come out. So I found a few articles, and there was a case study. I'll make it brief, but essentially there was an autistic man married to a neurotypical woman, and he, similar sort of thing, the first sort of before they were married, very happy to do birthdays, Christmas, presents, I love yous, whatever. Once they got married, pretty much started saying, those things are stupid. Like, they don't make sense to me. Those things are for kids. You shouldn't need them. And over time, she started, because she was trying to be tolerant and because she was trying to accept him as he was, she started to deny her own needs. Worse than that, then go, oh, I am stupid for wanting a birthday present. Oh, it is silly of me to want him to say Happy Valentine's Day. Oh, I shouldn't ask for. Over a course of years, she diminishes herself so much she can't even recognize herself. And I hear that in this call, the potential for that.
Oh, I agree that I hear that in that call as well. Yeah. Because what it's about is undermining what you are and who you are to accommodate somebody else who has every right to be that somebody else, who doesn't like nature, who likes an ant, doesn't like beautiful. I'm just going to keep harping on about Wilson's
Primary. Yep.
Red flag. No. Yep. That humanity is perfect, wonderful human he might be, but he doesn't serve what you need, which is a whole range of other stuff, and you shouldn't change those needs just to suit and fit the capacity of somebody else.
You know what? There is someone for him. That someone is not you.
No.
Because if you want, I feel like she's seeking, and I understand this as a kind of a person who tries to live in the world as someone who's loving and accepting, as do you. I think she wants permission. I'm going to give you permission, girl, to not date this guy. And I'm going to give you that permission from the point of view of someone, like, I would lay on the freeway for my kid. Like, I am obsessed with this child. I love this child. I am you know, Daenerys Targaryen, I've got my fucking dragons, the whole thing. I would say to you, honestly, and I mean this with love, I wouldn't want her dating you because she would feel bad about herself. She would know that she's not fulfilling the needs that you have. So even if you can't look at it from your point of view, look at it from his. There'll be a point at which he feels like shit, like he's getting everything wrong, where he may not even understand why you're upset.
Hallelujah, Nellie Thomas. If I could give you a chairlift right now and run you around in celebration, or you know, if I could get a BMX, I would do a freaking wheelie right, because that's a really good reframing, a really important one that I think if you can take personal responsibility, it's that. It's that. Actually, I'm not right for you because I want things that you can't give me. I could pretend for 6 months as well that I don't, but at a fundamental, very important level, I do. So therefore, where the disservice is on both sides. And I think that is really good for people to reframe in that way, because it stops that, should I be kind? Well, you're not being kind, actually.
No.
I think, without being harsh, you're beautiful. I really, I would marry that woman.
Yeah. But he's going to get worn down. So again, I'm doing the case study because I don't want to personalize it with this particular person. In that case study, for example, the husband ended up agreeing, well, I won't buy you a present, but I'll get you a cake. But then he'd get a cake and he wouldn't blow the candles out and he wouldn't do the cut and he wouldn't sing happy birthday. And basically he'd seethe and he'd be angry and resentful. So he's feeling like shit. She's feeling like shit. He's going, well, I did what you asked. And she's like, yeah, but you haven't done it joyfully. You don't really, you've made it very clear you don't want to do it. So no one's happy. What's the answer? You're not right for each other.
Oh, what a relief. That makes things so simple.
Right?
Doesn't it?
Get your cake.
Blow out your candles.
Blow out your fucking candles. And you are better off on your own, and I don't mean that as a lesser option. Be on your, do not compare him to some dickheads you've dated. That doesn't make him the right one.
No. Oh gosh, you are good. I'm with you. I'm behind you all the way. I'm the big, I'm playing a trombone in the band.
Love
it. Correct.
If it is a cake, I'm saying don't even go to the supermarket and buy a mud cake. I'm saying order yourself one online. Get your bloody name put on it. Have sparklers. I don't care if you're on your own with that fucking cake. You eat that cake, kid.
Eat all of it.
A Trunchbull situation. Put it on Instagram. I'll share it. Jacinta will share it.
I'll bloody share it. Does she even have a cake? I don't think she has a cake.
No.
Case study.
I'm giving
it's a cake. Person. It's a metaphoric cake.
Yes.
Yes.
But genuinely, can I just say in all, like from the heart, your needs matter. And if he can't, it's different if it's your kid. It's different if it's a co-worker. There's a whole range of situations in which it's different. But you don't have to be in a relationship with anyone that either can't or won't meet your needs.
This, again, and we're going over the same ground, but I'm having great moments of the way you've explained this is so important, because I think it's gendered, that there's a sense of selfishness with needs.
Mm.
But again, the reframing of that where you think, well, actually my needs are there.
Yeah.
My being selfish by expecting somebody that is not capable of meeting them to participate.
Mm.
And so therefore it's not about selfishness. It's about duty of care. Really.
100%. To both of you.
That helps, I think, a lot.
Good. If you can't do it for yourself, and I mean this genuinely, do it for him. Because down the track, he'll be going, I know I'm getting everything wrong. I can see it. I can sense it. You said he's got a high emotional intelligence. He will know that you're upset, that you're resentful. Don't put him in that position either. Let's move on, my darling, to my favourite two segments. No shade on my ex. I don't even know how many exes you've got and whether you can do that. You can do someone else's ex. And then lastly, we go, there are 10, but. So you're on a date with, like, the ideal human being, and then they do something where you go, oh, fuck that, I'm out. So, no shade on your ex. Have you got an ex story that you can share or someone else's?
It was like back in the, 16th century that
Love.
I elsewise. I'm just thinking I should have done my homework on this.
Did he park his horse and cart out the front of your dad's place? Like,
When he lifted his top hat and said "toodle pip," I was like, shush it on your toodle pips."
bedpan was not pristine.
That's right. And the wolf smell, my God. No, it was so long ago. I kind of remember. I have no memory that's substantial. I mean, I went out with I still am in contact with my very first boyfriend.
Oh,
Yeah,
adorable.
when I was 16 years of age, and we catch up and have such a beautiful relationship, I would like to say, because we knew each other when. And something that we've definitely put the golden light over it. And this is
Good.
lovely. But yeah, it's really good. So that's as good as I can go with
So
that.
when we go no shade, you actually have no shade. You just have golden light.
Wait till I get some history and get me
Right.
back. And
I'll
then I'll
be having you back on.
shade.
Let's go. There are 10, but so you are, I'm picturing for you, Keanu Reeves. That's just who I'm picturing.
I'm not letting you set me up with anyone if you can set me up with Keanu Reeves. No.
No?
No.
Oh, all right. Give me a genre.
A poet kind of feel, maybe.
Oh, I've got you. Oh, you're in for a whole lot of trouble there,
Yeah,
but we'll
I know. I've
get
got
there.
to shut that up. Shush it.
All right. So you're on a date with this fabulous poet and everything's going well. And then they do something preferably superficial, you know, like they scrape their fork on the plate or something. What is it where you go, oh, fuck, I'm out of here?
Oh God, I really should have done my homework on these questions. My absolute, this is not going to work with us. Look, okay, I have whatever that thing is called, where if you slurp, you're continue. I can't even. Even
Can't
with
do it.
it's like we could get into some situation here if you slurp like that, because I can't handle it.
Can't do it. Misophonia, it's called.
Yeah, it's real, it's alive. Yeah, good point. I might find some slurping scenarios just to see whether that's going to be it. But
Well, you did tell me before we started talking on air that you're off to Tokyo, and I can tell you're going to hear some slurping, my doll.
no, how does one just breathes and feels strong feelings? It's all training, isn't it? It's all training.
And again, like our caller, that doesn't mean that you have to write off the country of Japan. What it means is that you can't personally marry someone who's a slurper.
That's right.
Different
You
things.
can also slip away. Slip away. But you and
Slurp away.
me, this is not going to be biblical.
I'll
No.
breathe through it, but I'm not going to bump uglies with you.
That's
Is
right.
that right?
There we are. Thank you. This is great therapy for me. I haven't thought
Is
this through.
good. If you're
Anyway, Kiana.
feeling too superficial, let me just tell you that previous guests have said things like if they had pointy shoes that were straight at the end. You know those shoes, like those mobster shoes that
God,
kind
I actually agree with that. Shoes is my criteria. I've used that as a criteria.
Or
Shoes.
someone, Scott Brennan went on a date with a guy who they went on a walk and he kept farting. We try and go because we go relatively deep in the other areas of the podcast. We're like, come on, own it. Like, what is the deal?
It. No, I'm very superficial and that stuff really affects me. And shoes, I'm just agreeing now. Now I'm on a roll. Shoes, and I agree with the square bit up the top. And it's shoes with casual pants, like a tracksuit. Oh, yeah, I can't do that. That upsets me at a cosmic level. And I don't trust you if you've done that. I don't trust
Mine is middle-aged ladies with multicolored hair,
you.
right? There's a particular genre of middle-aged lady. She's probably in a leopard print. She's got multicolored hair. She's probably saying, I don't really like attention. You're going, you sure about that, doll? Are you sure?
I'm scared I'm going to be one of those women.
You
You
are.
know? Yeah. I'm going to roll into that. There'll be purple and green and a little bit of pink, just a flash.
Oh my God,
Yeah.
so much so. Oh my God, you are the best. Chuck
You're
out the
the
rest. Are
best.
you coming back on?
Yes. This has been
Please, for sloppy
very
seconds.
nurturing for my soul.
I
Thank
love it.
you.
And will you please help me when you're ready? When? And I will wait as long as it takes. When you're ready, I want to help you navigate the big bad jungle out there.
You bloody set me off, Keanu Reeves, though. I'm coming for you.
All right. All right. Keanu, there'll be someone listening who will take Keanu, let me tell you.
Yeah. I mean, Keanu, that's the point you've made. Keanu's
not
great.
Not for everyone.
Not for everyone.
Not for you. Need a poet. You want bloody Nick Cave, don't you?
No, I really don't. I think I'm misguided with that idea because the reality of it is not actually what I want. I don't want you.
We need to have dinner and I'll talk you through a poet experience or two. Let me tell you, this is not the genre you should be seeking.
Definitely not beat. No jazz. No jazz in my life.
And no one scatting.
No,
fucking scatting.
I took my little guy to go and see some jazz fusion when he was really little. God knows why. Anyway, we're there. I pushed him up to the front, as any good tiger mum would. And he turned around to me because he was wedged between two very large adults and he had a tear rolling down his eye and he said, get me out. And I said, there's only one more song, knowing full well that that song was going to go for 15 minutes.
Oh, my God. I am calling this episode's going to be subtitled Get Me Out of Here. That is heaven. I couldn't love it more. Now I'm going to put links to your book.
Thank you.
Radio program, to everything else I can find in the show notes. For those who are coming along to the live show, I believe you'll be present.
We'll be.
With your darling friend, Sammy Shah, among others. And we will get you back on very shortly for Sloppy Seconds. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, darling.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice, dear Nelly. Yes, some help would be nice, dear Nelly. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nelly. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly. When you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to Dear Nelly. Now, don't be shy. I would love to hear your questions and comments. To send me a recording or an email, go to nellythomas.com and follow the links. It's super easy, and you might hear me talk about your question in a future episode. Huge thanks to producer Sam Peterson from the Producer Boy Creative Production Team and to producer Faye Younger, who in addition to being an excellent human, is also a brilliant real estate buyer's advocate and can be found at youngerhill.com. Thanks to Acast and all the team. And lastly, to you. Without the listeners, I'm just a middle-aged mole talking shit to no one. Please rate, review, and consider subscribing for $5 a month for a bonus episode and to help me keep the lights on. And tell your bloody mates, would ya? I'd really appreciate it. Love yous.